Welcome to a burning fire. Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. This is a discussion of the relationship of the qualifications of elders and the work of elders. Now, we've had many lessons over the years regarding those who serve in the most awesome work of being an elder in the Lord's church. But this lesson approaches the matter a bit differently than we have ever presented it before. There are reasons for and relationships between the qualifications that God directs and the work that He expects. God's government for the church is relatively simple. Christ is the head of the church. Christians are organized into local congregations, overseen by a plurality of elders, served by deacons, and all the members making up the body, including those who preach and teach. There is no authority for a super ecclesiastical organization, but each congregation possesses local autonomy, with all congregations tied together by a common bond of the faith. Elders are also identified as pastors and bishops and shepherds and presbyters. Now, these words imply, and they do describe, the nature of their work. Simply stated, without the qualifications, they cannot effectively do the work. And it is a work. 1 Timothy 3 and verse 1, if a man desire the office of a bishop, he desireth a good work. Dear friend, the position of elder is not merely to bestow some honor or place of power and authority. Now, while that might be included to some degree, that's not the purpose of this office. An elder is not and should not be selected because of popularity like one might be chosen for a political office. Some might possibly look upon elders somewhat like a board of directors, with the preacher being the chief executive officer, but this is a mistaken notion. Being an elder is the most serious responsibility one can assume because of the nature of the work involved and its far-reaching consequences, which are both temporal and eternal. Elders deal with souls, with lives, with destinies, with truth, with matters that are sacred before God. They will either bring glory to God or reproach upon Christ. And the failure to do the work properly is no fault of the pattern of God's government, not the pattern that He has designed, but the failure of men to expedite the work correctly. And this failure is usually due to the lack of qualifications. Now, what is His work? We shall now consider the work of elders, not necessarily in order of importance, because all of His work is importance. But He is to serve as an example to the flock, 1 Peter 5 and verse 3, being ensamples to the flock. Like Paul, he must live an exemplary life, 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 1. He says, by word and by deed, this is the way you're supposed to serve God as a Christian. That's the message of the elder to the congregation. Being an example does not nullify his authority, and that shall be discussed later. And his authority is not limited and confined to simply being an example. But because he is to be a proper example, you can see the necessity for him to take heed unto himself, Acts 20:28. To be the right example demands vigilance and self-examination and caution, constant introspection of himself. He must never allow himself to become a stumbling block or a hindrance to others, guarding his words and his habits and his values and his priorities. Friend, you cannot lead where you will not go, and this is what the elder says to the church, follow me as I follow Christ. The elder is to tend the flock. 1 Peter 5 and verse 2, the American Standard Version, tend the flock of God which is among you. The word tend is rendered feed in the King James Version. Tend is a more inclusive term, however. It includes feeding, but a lot more. Feeding is one of the specifics in tending. And with these words, Peter uses the analogy of a shepherd and his sheep. Like Christ, the chief shepherd, the elder is not a hireling, but one who seeks the welfare of the sheep, even before himself. He provides, he protects from wolves. He leads, he guides, he comforts, he cures, he supplies, and he seeks the highest good of all at all times, even when it demands great personal effort and sacrifice. And this is the idea that's presented in Psalm 23. The elder bestows benefits upon those in his charge. But more specifically, he must feed the flock, Acts chapter 20 and 1 Peter 5. As stated, this is a part of tending the flock. This means that it is his responsibility to provide spiritual nourishment, which is the Word of God. God has provided food for his people to nourish the soul. Elders are to serve that food, and the flock is expected to partake of it. It is the work of elders to be certain that the right food is served and served the right way, Ephesians 4:15. They must screen what is served, monitoring what is taught, as well as teaching themselves, providing good materials and a balanced diet. They are responsible for who teaches and for what is taught, whether in the classroom or in the pulpit. And parenthetically, let me state that I once had a so-called elder to tell me he was not responsible for what the preacher taught from the pulpit. But that was totally the preacher's responsibility. Friend, that man was all wrong, wrong as he could be. I told him he was either responsible or he was irresponsible, because the Lord has placed the responsibility on the elders for what is taught. If elders were knowledgeable and attentive to what is taught, the liberals and the digressives and the apostates and the change agents would have no place to inject their venom into the church. Elders must provide that which builds character, that will equip one for life and for duty. They must provide for that which enable a person to face trial and temptation and to meet threats and problems. They must guide the people in times of success as well as failure. Enduring the hardships of life, serving and worshiping God faithfully, rearing their families, giving biblical answers that brethren might grow spiritually and become Christ-like. And while many are obsessed with so-called counselors, the elders are our counselors, and they must lead in matters of discipline of the rebellious. All of this, of course, demands a knowledge of the Word, and a knowledge of those people whom he leads. Some need milk, while others need meat. The flock must know what saves from sin, and it is the duty of the elders to see that the flock has opportunity to learn and to respond to what the Lord requires in this matter. And in 1 Peter chapter 5, in verse 2, the elders are instructed to take the oversight thereof, for they are overseers, Acts 20:28. And this concept is embraced in the meaning of the word bishop. They are to superintend, they are to exercise authority and rule, they are to lead, not drive, they are to govern, they are to decide for the church. They have the authority to expedite the duties assigned to them. But they are warned not to abuse that authority by being lords over God's heritage. They are to use, not abuse, their authority. It is their task to see that the work of the church is expedited, 1 Timothy 3 and verse 15, and this requires of them great judgment, a consideration of the flock, and a willingness to accept this responsibility. As President Truman was reported to have once said, he has a sign in his office, "The buck stops here." Well, so it is with the elders and the affairs of the local congregation. And their authority is limited as well as delegated. They do not decide the doctrine, but they decide the way the doctrine is to be proclaimed and upheld. They cannot alter the revelation of God's will in any particular, such as matters regarding baptism or the work of women or the Lord's Supper or the assembly or marriage and divorce, but they have the duty to see that God's truth is taught and that God's truth is followed. They are to be watchmen. Hebrews 13:17, "Obey them which have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls as they that must give an account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you." Now, friend, this tells us something of the depth and the seriousness of their work and their responsibility. They must watch for the welfare of souls, and they shall give an answer to God for those souls. They have to care for what happens to people. With some, the question, "Where are they?" is a fearful thought. The parable of the lost sheep, with 99 safe in the fold, where was the one? But it shows the shepherd leaving the 99 and seeking the one lost sheep. This is their work. Where are they? They need to know where the sheep are, and to know that they're safely in the fold. Therefore, this demands of them vigilance. It demands warning of the enemy. It demands providing measures of defense and being alert, rebuking, disciplining, being ready to action, and seeking the recovery of those who fall. Now, the qualifications make one fit for the task. Some of the qualifications of elders are absolute, while others are obviously matters of degree, which would allow room for continued growth, but they possess these qualities to a recognizable degree before they are so appointed. Some are more qualified than others. And all qualifications, however, are designed to enable him to accomplish the work he undertakes. They are related, both positive and negative in nature. And he must possess them, lest he cannot function as he must. A man may be a good man, a moral man, an accomplished man. He may be successful in business. He may be mentally clean and intellectually competent. He may even be popular. He may have leadership abilities in other fields, and yet not be qualified to be an elder in the Lord's church. It is no disgrace to never be asked to be an elder in the church. But one should be qualified before he is asked and before he accepts. The qualification for elders are given by the Holy Spirit in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and in Titus chapter 1. And in our discussion we shall combine the lists since some overlap. Most of them have to do with character, an inward quality, spiritual qualities that are manifested in his life, that are observable in his behavior, in his conduct, and his manners. They deal with what governs his life. How can one be a spiritual leader without proper spiritual qualifications? These qualifications are in the imitation of Christ, and they should be, and for the most part are, characteristic of all Christians, but especially for elders. Now, he is to be no striker or broiler or contentious. As I said, we find these qualities listed in 1 Timothy 3 and Titus chapter 1, and they are closely related. He is not to be the type of person who is ready with a blow, pugnacious and quarrelsome, with an unruly temper and belligerent, argumentative, and disposed even to physical combat. Now, this does not mean that he does not stand strong for the truth, but his manner in doing so must not be like that of the world. He must understand the nature of our warfare, 2 Corinthians 10. Otherwise, he's going to bring reproach on the church, reproach on the eldership, reproach on the truth. He will do harm. How can you lead in peace if you are so warlike? The elder is not soon angry. Closely related to the above qualifications, he must not be soon angered, but a person of self-control, Titus 1:7. In other words, he can't have what is sometimes called a low boiling point. He can't be a hothead or have a short fuse. An elder must be the kind of person who will not allow himself to be easily provoked and touchy. He can't be too thin-skinned. He must guard his words and his actions and even the impressions that he gives, and to be a self-disciplined individual. Some men may have good qualities that enable them to preach and to deal with false teachers and to promote the gospel, but not be qualified as an elder for the lack of these very characteristics. An elder is to be temperate and vigilant and sober-minded. 1 Timothy 3 and Titus chapter 1 calls for these traits. He must be a person of an even disposition, a calm and thoughtful person, opposite of one who is rash and frivolous, impulsive or extreme. These qualities have to be developed over years of prior becoming an elder, being watchful for his habits and his emotions, always in moderation. In his work, he cannot afford explosive reactions, but he must meditate and be rational. Enter the depth of consideration and seriousness. He can't be just a pop-off without giving due thought. He must be watchful for and anticipate consequences for what he says and for what he does. It is more to being an elder than just being one of good intentions. And all these qualities will make him just and holy and fair and righteous and impartial. It will make him respectful of what is sacred with the highest and purest motives. He is to be a man of an unblemished integrity. Now, the above-mentioned qualities, friend, are behavioral qualities. And now let us consider some qualities of heart that will manifest themselves outwardly. Now, while we are limited in our knowledge of the heart of another, God knows, and we can judge by the fruits that are born. An elder must not be self-willed, having to have his way all the time, as was Diotrephes in 3 John 9, who loved to have the preeminence among brethren. An elder must be gentle and patient and kindly toward others. That doesn't mean permissive of sin, but not harsh and bitter and vindictive and vengeful, always complaining, and obviously not to be discourteous. He must not have this dictator complex. He must not think his rule means that he's some kind of boss. How can one lead the church effectively if he ignores his treatment of other people? How can he win their trust and their confidence that he must have if he's going to be effectively a leader? He must be given to hospitality, showing a welcome attitude toward others. He must be a friendly and a gracious person, concerned for the needs of others, kindly disposed, an encourager of men, reaching out for the benefit of his people. And also, he must have the right attitude toward being an elder, desiring the work with a pure motive, not in order to advance himself or bring self-glory, but to serve and to help people get to heaven. His concern is souls, the lost and the saved, for Christ and his church. You see, such things like that matter to him more than life itself. And then we see the qualities of knowledge and ability, experience and wisdom. Elders must know sound doctrine, even being able to convict the gainsayer, holding fast the faithful word, Titus 1:9. And how can he feed without knowing what to feed? He may serve, or allow to be served, that which will poison the soul if he is without the knowledge of the truth. Elders must be apt and able to teach. Not that they personally have to do all the teaching, for there are teachers and preachers in the church also. But he must be able to communicate God's will. After all, the mission of the eternal kingdom is to be the pillar and the ground of the truth. How can he expedite that work if he is ignorant of the truth? And the church is supposed to support that truth. He cannot be simply a novice or newcomer or recent convert, but one who is well grounded. He has been down the road at home and at life and in church, and he knows the pitfalls. If ever the blind leading the blind takes on a meeting, it does regarding elders leading the church. He must have the wisdom of age. And God has not turned the leadership of the church into the hands of the youth. So much digression and apostasy has resulted because men, too young and too inexperienced, have taken control. A novice does not even know that for which to look and to be aware. Experience is necessary to keep the church on course. And he must not be given to wine, but be orderly, of good behavior. He is to be modest, the opposite of being uncouth and earthy. He has, as the saying goes, got it all together. And how can he be a good example if his own habits are deranged? His appearance, his manner of speech, his faithfulness in worship, that's always to be of a gentleman. You do not teach the evil of drinking strong drink if you drink. And how do you uphold modesty if those of your home are immodest? And how can you urge worship if you ignore the assemblies? This has always been an important matter, his domestic life, but probably more so in our time due to the havoc being wreaked concerning marriage and the home. How can he guide the young and teach how homes ought to be if his home is in disarray? He is to be the husband of one wife, and that means one at a time, one who respects God's marriage laws, and to have proven his capacity to lead in the paths of righteousness in his own home, and demonstrated the ability to rear his children in the Lord. How can he rule the house of God if he cannot rule his own house? It is unfortunate that the conduct of a man's family can reflect badly upon him. His wife can make him unfit for the eldership. His children can bring reproach upon him. And where there are problems in the home, this can be a handicap for him in this work. And what of his reputation, his values, and his priorities? And while the world does not set our standards, an elder must have a good report from those without. Otherwise, a man can bring reproach on the church if he is known to be an adulterer, or a liar, a hypocrite, a cheat, a boozer, a man that's profane. No, he must be without reproach. He must be blameless. That doesn't mean sinless perfection. But he's honest and upright and decent. He's known for his goodness. How can you expect those who need to be converted to respect the church, who would put people in leadership whose moral lives are worse than their own? And this is sometimes a problem even with many members of the church. He is not to be a covetous man. He is not to be a lover of money. His emphasis is spiritual, not physical gain. He knows the value of the soul, the value of the body, the value of time and eternity. And how can he lead people to seek first things first and have their affections on things above if he does not have the proper priorities in life? Yes, he must love good men rather than evil. He shows what he appreciates and considers what really matters in life by the kind of person that he is. Well, can we find such a one as this? You know, this was the question that Pharaoh asked when Joseph gave him advice on how to select a man to lead and to prepare for the coming years of plenty and famine in Egypt. Yes, the qualifications are tremendous, but they are attainable or God would not have required them. There's probably nothing worse than having the wrong man in the right place. This is true in civil government. It was true in the history of Israel. Even recognized in more trivial matters of business positions, coaching duties, and other such things. But never is it more important to have the right people in leadership than in the Lord's church. God knows what he wants done. He knows what it takes to get it done. He has designed the qualifications that men are to possess who undertake the work that is to be done, and we dare not dismiss any of them, none of them. They're not optional, they're not disposable. As stated, some are absolute, some are matters of degree, but all must be present in that man who is asked to give his life in this service and work, and we must respect them all. Therefore, we should encourage the younger men to give themselves to the development of these qualities, so when opportunity is given them to assume leadership, they will be ready and willing and qualified, and then they will do well. This has been A Burning Fire, and your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.